Kevin McCullough Radio, breaking news as it happens, what it means, and why it matters.
Confusion.
Amplifying truth.
And pursuing clarity.
Kevin McCullough, no.
It's a big legal day at Kevin McCullough Radio. Ari Fleischer a bit later with media reaction to all of the court cases and what's happened. Dr. Gina Loudon will be with us to talk about things from a female perspective. Amy Swear from Heritage on Guns. And we start with a look at the entire SCOTUS with our good friend Andy McCarthy. It's Kevin McCullough, and we're getting started right now.
Something interesting is happening with this.
Kevin McCullough, let me start with you.
I found this thing at townhall.com by Kevin McCullough.
The big dog has come out of nowhere.
Kevin McCullough.
I just want to help people think.
Nationally syndicated radio host and author of No, He Can't.
He is playing the role
as well as anybody could.
Kevin McCullough is a nationally syndicated radio host and author of No, He Can't.
The odds are he's right.
It's Kevin McCullough Radio.
All right, friends, I'm still kind of basking in the glory that was last week in what the Supreme Court did. And as I said very candidly on the Friday show and again on my weekend show, when you've worked for something for 48 years, I was 4 years old when I first became aware of what Roe v. Wade was, and it was the year after it had been enacted. And from that day until last Friday, every day, I had thought at some point in time about what we needed to do to undo that unjust ruling. And to realize how many states were immediately going to begin saving babies' lives, and to see the real difference that actual political strategy made. I mean, think about the fact that President Trump had three appointments that went to the Federalist Society and got qualified justices and got really good constitutionally minded people and got them into that position. It's a watershed, landmark, historic kind of moment, and we experienced it all on Friday. But the reaction to it is of course still coming in. And, you know, I, for all of the yammer about how bad the protests were going to be following the ruling, I haven't seen. It seems a lot of vim and vigor, but not a lot of there. Anyway, someone who may have an opinion more about the law than the reaction is Andy McCarthy, who joins us, NRO senior contributor. And you see him on Fox News all the time breaking down the legal stuff. Andy, thank you. I know you're super busy, so sparing even a little bit of time for us is really appreciated. I'm so grateful. Before we talk about Roe specifically, you had in this session by the court two cases that touched religious liberty, one case that touched voter integrity, a big case that touched guns, and maybe the Mac Daddy of them all, the Dobbs case. Your impression of what this, you know, first year rookie court, how they did, and, you know, what kind of foundation does this lay for us to understand how the court's going to be going forward?
Well, thanks so much, Kevin. And I think we can say, even after just a year has gone by, the signal achievement of Donald Trump's presidency is getting Amy Coney Barrett on the court. The other appointments were conservative for conservative changes, whereas this one replaced an iconic progressive justice with a very strong constitutional conservative, which the effect of which was to change the court from a 5-4 to a 6-3 working conservative majority on the court that really gave Chief Justice Roberts, it really gave him much less ability to do that. And as a result, this litany of important cases that you just reeled through, the only reason they got in front of the court and they got decided is because I think Roberts was no longer in a position to deflect them.
In the gun case and in the Dobbs case, both the New York case and the Dobbs case, Roberts sided with the majority. And I kind of thought under different circumstances he might not have. Now, certainly he's not as political as I'm simplifying him to be. But this gives him a little bit of cover to be who he was at the lower level, doesn't it? I mean, he's not the only guy anymore. It's shared responsibility by all six of them.
Yeah, I think the thing, Kevin, is that, you know, our listeners should know it takes four votes to take a case and five votes to decide it, right? So if you're a conservative justice, you may want to take an abortion case, but you don't want to take it if you're going to lose.
Right.
So if the court is 5-4 and you have to worry that Roberts may take a walk on the wild side, this may be one of these times when he votes with the progressives, you'd rather not take that case at all than take it and lose. And of course, from the perspective of the progressives, they don't want to take the case because the law was already in their favor. Why would they want to change it?
Yeah.
But once the court is 6-3, you don't have to worry about Roberts voting with the left anymore because you have a stable 5-justice majority. Now, you know, we did have some concerns that one or two of the other justices could be peeled off in some kind of a compromise. But you're willing to take a chance if you think the worst possible outcome. I mean, if the worst outcome for us would have been that the Mississippi was upheld and the court postponed consideration of Roe to another day, we'd be deeply disappointed, but that would still be an advance for life. So you would roll the dice and be willing to take that case, whereas, you know, maybe 2 years ago you wouldn't have.
Let me go back to your first point, because I think it's a brilliant one. Amy Coney Barrett versus Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Although, Andy, a lot of people don't know this, and RBG was no fan of Roe v. Wade. She actually said that she felt it was it went too far, and that it should the broader issue. And I think what she means by the broader issue was should the federal law embody permission for abortion, or should that be a state's rights issue? She said that broader issue should have been left to the states. Actually, she and ACB weren't that far apart on it.
Well, you know, Kevin, I've heard a lot of that this weekend, too, and it's undoubtedly true. I mean, what you're talking about is based on her scholarship. But I think there's the RBG before she got on the court, and then the RBG when she got on the court. And when she got on the court, she was a reliable vote for Roe versus Wade. So
yeah.
I think as an academic, she was very wise to think that from a progressive point of view, what Roe did was interrupt what from their standpoint was progressive state legislation. So at the time of Roe, what was it, 30 states had a ban on abortion, but 20 states had regulated it and improved it in some other way, and it looked like the trajectory was in favor of the pro-abortion side. And what RBG, I think, said as an academic, quite correctly, was that if Roe hadn't interfered with that, it probably would have evolved into a direction that the progressives would have liked, and we wouldn't have had all this ruinous politicizing of the court. Once she was on the court, she was happy to have Roe, and she was a reliable vote in favor of it. So, you know, there's two sides to that.
That's right. One other former justice, very quickly, Antonin Scalia was quoted heavily by Thomas, and he was referred to frequently by Alito in these two cases, the gun case and the abortion case. I'm just curious your thoughts about the influence that he cast now years after his death.
There are only a handful of justices in the United States, in the history of the United States, who really have an impact on how the law develops, that not only at the time that they're on the court, but that lives beyond them. And Justice Scalia is one of that handful. After his career, it's no longer possible for judges to ignore the text of statutes, as they were routinely doing throughout the 1970s. And he is really the breakthrough figure, Kevin, when it comes to originalism as a philosophy, this idea that the Constitution means what it meant, what its original public meaning was at the time that it was adopted, and that statutes mean what they say at the time that they're enacted by Congress, the public meaning of them, which doesn't allow judges the wiggle room to reinterpret them. Those are epic. The impact on our jurisprudence from Justice Scalia's career is just it's really an impressive and singular thing.
Well, Andy, thanks again, and we appreciate all your insight. And now he's got to run off and do Fox News. Kevin McCullough coming right back.